Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Join us on Thursday as we explore Pet Health and Homeopathy, a show co-hosted by Homeopathy World Community founder and homeopath Debbie Bruck, and Doctor of Veterinary Medicine, author and homeopath Christina Chambreau. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your questions. Let's go!
Debbie Bruck, founder of Homeopathy World Community, and we are supposed to be speaking with our co-host, Dr. Christina Chambreau, of Doctor of Veterinary Medicine. Today is October 20th, 2011. So far, we've had some great shows with her. One of Seven Keys to the Health of Your Pet, and the second one is called How to Remove Fleas from Your Animals, Your Pets, and Your Home. Dr. Christina Chambreau is an internationally known homeopathic veterinarian and author and speaker. Her book, Healthy Animals Journal, was published in 2003. She graduated from the University of Georgia Veterinary Medicine in 1980 and began using homeopathy in her practice in 1983. She's primarily used homeopathy since 1988. So between the time span of 5 years, she's found that probably it really helped to prevent disease and sickness in the animals. She's a dynamic teacher and the founder of the Academy of Veterinary Homeopathy. Dr. Christina Chambreau lectures at conventions, schools, clubs, and to anyone who is concerned about improving the health of animals. She also teaches her own 1 to 10 day courses and is the co-author of a repertory tutorial and how to have a stress-free wedding. She's also written many, many articles and appeared on lots of other radio shows. Today's topic is about hypothyroidism, and I'm wondering whether she's going to get on or not. In the meantime, I guess I can provide for you some information if she does not show up today. For the half-hour period, I can fill in a lot of information. Probably people want to know, what are the main symptoms of hypothyroidism? Almost any symptoms can be a result of the thyroid gland malfunction. Since the hormones influence the metabolism of most of the organs in our body and also in the pet's body, common ones when the thyroid is very ill include skin and ear problems of any sort, lethargy, weight gain, mood issues, and even neurological problems like seizures. So you see, we are constantly dealing with those types of epidemics of skin diseases and weight gain, obesity, not only in humans today, but also in our pets, especially if we're not feeding them properly. Dr. Christina definitely emphasizes the type of nutrition that you give to your pets. The word thyroid itself is from a Greek, the Greek language, and means shield-shaped. The thyroid glands are a pair of glands at the base of the neck where the trachea, the windpipe, enters the chest. The thyroid secretes and regulates hormones responsible for metabolism. Hey, we've got some people who have called into the show. Let me check who's on the line. Hello there.
Hi, it's Christina Chambreau.
Woo! I'm so happy you signed in.
I have no connection to the internet except I finally got it on my cell phone. So
okay.
I'm on the regular phone, having sent you multiple messages. I heard you reading.
Okay. I got it started.
So I'm here, and we have some other people as well, you said?
Well, whoever it was dropped off the line. Maybe you tried to call in on another line. And
I did. Okay. I did. I called in on two lines.
Okay. That was you.
That was me. Okay.
Okey
so
dokey.
Good. I heard you reading about some of the main symptoms of thyroid problems.
Right.
So that's excellent. So a couple of so shall I just continue?
Well, I was just kind of explaining a little bit. Most people know that the thyroid gland in their throat, that they can feel it if it's abnormal, and that it is, you said it's shield-shaped. I usually think of it as a butterfly.
Uh-huh.
Is that another description.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
Absolutely. And usually you can't feel it easily in most dogs.
Even if it's abnormal?
Even when it's abnormal, you can't usually palpate it.
Okay, so that's interesting.
That's why the rubric is slightly not accurate. The best homeopathic rubric to use is external throat goiter.
Okay.
And that's accurate and seems to work for healing dogs with hypothyroidism, but it's not something that even as a veterinarian, I would palpate the thyroid gland.
Mm-hmm. And is it specifically that we're dealing with dog issue today with the hypothyroid?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, very rarely a cat can have low or hypothyroidism. Cat's issue is high thyroid or hyperthyroid.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a completely different discussion. So we'll do that on another day.
Perfect.
So we're just basically, I mean, as I say, it could apply to cats, but basically we're just talking about dogs. And the reason that you can't really palpate it and that it's not swollen the way a human goiter is swollen is that really, as Gene Dodd says, and I've included some links for this, we should just let people have this one for free, anybody who's participating. And if you do a Google search for her article, she has many on hypothyroidism. And really, it's a thyroiditis. So it's an inflammation. And I don't know what it is in people, but it's an inflammation of the thyroid gland. And it's an autoimmune problem. So therefore, of course, what do we think of when we think of autoimmune problems? What's the cause of that?
Well, a lot of people will just, HIV comes to mind, or some other major disease that their immune system is not functioning.
Right, but what gave them such a weak immune system that they even got HIV? What are some of the things we do that weaken our immune system?
They get diseases like from viruses and bacteria.
Ah, yes, but healthy people don't get it. So what we do is we do things that we talked about in the first talk on the seven keys to health,
mm-hmm.
to healthy animals. And when you over-vaccinate an animal who's susceptible to vaccines, what you're doing is continually stimulating the immune system in an artificial manner. And so one of the most common issues for dogs and cats and horses and people, when they receive extra vaccines and more and more and more vaccines, is their immune system becomes weaker and weaker. When I was a vet tech in the 1960s, I started in about 63, we rarely, if ever, saw any autoimmune diseases. We saw a lot of skin problems, but we didn't see Cushing's disease, diabetes, Addison's disease. When I graduated from vet school in 1980, it was still quite unusual. Mm-hmm. Now, in 1980 was when we first started vaccinating, well, maybe 1982, for parvo. I admitted the first parvo case to the University of Georgia in 1979. And up to that point, dogs basically got two sets of three vaccines, distemper, hepatitis, and leptospirosis. It was DHL, and that was it. And they were done. It was all over. And then they got rabies. And they got the DHL once a year, but that was it. And many of them didn't even get that, and we didn't push really hard for it back in the 60s. Now that we're giving distemper, hepatitis, leptospirosis, parainfluenza, parvovirus, Lyme disease, Bordetella, corona vaccine, coronavirus, and several others that really haven't caught on, but that the manufacturers try to get us to do. Now that we've had this plethora of vaccines and poor diet full of chemicals and more chemicals on the planet and more chemicals being administered directly to the animals and in our house and in the yard and in the car, we're now seeing a huge increase in autoimmune diseases. So hypothyroidism is rampant.
Do you characterize, is cancer an autoimmune disease?
Okay, it's a disease of the immune system. Not necessarily autoimmune, but it's still. Mm-hmm. Cancer is because of all the stuff I talked about, Cushing's disease, diabetes, all of that.
Mm-hmm. Because I was just having a discussion just last evening with my husband regarding why do we have such an incredible increase in cancer?
Mm-hmm. I mean, because of everything I just talked about.
Right. He said it's an environmental disease from all of these chemicals in our body, in our house, in our home, in our yards, in
our
food.
That's part of it.
Partly,
that's
yeah.
That's part of it. The other part is vaccinations. Mm-hmm. The other part is suppression of childhood illnesses, partly through vaccination, partly through drugs. Mm-hmm. And when you suppress, from a homeopathic standpoint, when the energy field, when the vital force is healthy enough, it pushes symptoms to the outside. And even in Hahnemann's day, women, before they had a baby, would go to the doctor and get creams to get rid of any eruptions they had.
Mm-hmm.
So they would look better during childbirth. And there were, he gives a case either in Chronic Diseases or in the Organon of a woman who, after suppressing her skin eruptions, was infertile. And then years later, she became poverty stricken and had to walk barefoot in the streets and got her eruptions back. And then she became fertile again.
Hmm.
So
okay,
suppression is one of the key things.
Okay, let's take it back to the dogs.
Well, one of the things I want to emphasize about the dog is because of where the thyroid gland is, if you irritate that gland and damage that gland, it's going to be more likely to cause problems.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, using a dog collar is not a good thing to walk a dog with. And Peter DeBias, who's a veterinarian in Vancouver, who's done a lot of, he actually did a talk on hyperthyroidism in cats, and in his experience, Natrum Muriaticum was a major cure for that.
Mm-hmm.
And so Peter DeBias has a major campaign going on for getting dogs into harnesses, where the leash attaches on the chest, not on the back. Even a harness can cause some damage. As he switched dogs from collars to harnesses, he's seen a decrease in hypothyroidism. He's actually had front feet chewing completely go away. ear problems and eye problems go away because they're lymphatics and acupuncture meridians that run through the neck, mm-hmm. as well as pushing directly on the thyroid and, of course, the whole issue of chiropractic throwing them off. And if you think about it, what are the dogs that are most common? I mean, as Gene Dawes says, there's over 50 breeds that have hypothyroidism commonly, but most people agree that Doberman Pinschers, Great Danes, Boxers, Golden Retrievers, and I would add to that Labradors, have a high incidence of hypothyroidism, and they're very active, most of them friendly dogs that are pulling on the leash a lot. Mm-hmm. So they're pulling on the collar a lot. So nobody's ever done a study that I know of that, but the first step to prevent hypothyroidism is to we need to, like, just ban collars. Get rid of dry food for cats and get rid of people using collars to walk their dogs, use harnesses. So
it'll be hard to start banning in a free society, supposedly people manufacturing things and marketing these collars and dry foods.
Who's going to ban it? Ban it through education.
Right. So
love to see it see nobody purchasing and using collars to walk dogs, and I would love it if nobody purchased dry food for cats. Mm-hmm. If that happened, nobody would manufacture it.
That's right. So it's talking through your pocketbook.
Absolutely. And that makes a huge difference, which also makes a difference in terms of what you do, the other things to prevent hypothyroidism. One of them is nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
And nutrition has turned around many a hypothyroid dog who's just showing a few of the early symptoms of hypothyroid. While Gene Dodds feels that you need to get them all onto Suloxin, I have seen dogs that responded either to homeopathy, but even to just a simple change in diet from processed diet to a fresh raw food diet.
Mm-hmm.
So when you think about it, what are dogs meant to eat? Dogs are meant to eat. Dogs are physiologically and historically meant to eat raw meaty bones and pureed vegetables, because what they eat in the wild are they kill whole animals, so that's meat, bones, pureed vegetables, and some hair and skin, and they get roadkill or, you know, something, another prey has, another, they get prey that's already been killed and is maybe rotten. So
they'll eat that? Rotten.
Yes, dogs are carrion eaters.
Oh, okay.
Think of the jackals and wild dogs that you see in African movies. The lions do the kill, and the lions eat most of it, and then the jackals and the hyenas come in and take all the scraps. And often that happens over a period of days to a week. And so things are getting pretty ripe by then.
Hmm.
Early in the 90s, when I was doing one of my talks, a woman in the audience, when I talked about dogs being carrion eaters, said, "Oh, you mean it's okay when my dog brings home roadkill and drags what the deer hunters leave in the woods?" And I said, "Well, I bet you haven't always gotten it away from him. Has he ever gotten sick?" And she said, "No, he's never gotten sick." And I said, "Well, you no longer have a food bill. Stop feeding him."
Wow.
And basically, he fed himself. Now,
wow.
Some of it was more rotten
than
others. Now,
with this dog, I mean, I'm not really a dog owner.
Mm-hmm.
Do they maintain their friendly companionship with the owner when they behave this way in the wild? I mean, I don't know. I'm just an innocent.
Uh-huh. It doesn't make them revert. It doesn't change their behavior at all, other than make them a lot happier.
Okay.
And often aggressive dogs, when they're put onto a raw meat and pureed vegetable diet, stop being aggressive, because the aggression is caused by what? It's caused by an imbalance in the vital force. If the vital force is ill, it produces symptoms to rebalance itself.
Mm-hmm.
And even Hahnemann said that in order to cure a person, they one of the obstacles to cure was eating a bad diet.
Mm-hmm.
Now, his definition of a bad diet and ours is different. And he also talked about lifestyle. He said if you continue to live in a damp basement and you're getting ill from that, you're never going to be cured as long as you keep living in the damp basement or if you continue the job you have that's poisoning you.
Mm-hmm.
So homeopathy cannot cure if you don't have the basic building blocks for health that are needed. And those are different for every animal. So there are some cats who eat dry food and live to be 22. There's some dogs who eat the cheapest, most chemical, junky food there is and live to a long life. However, it's not the best approach. The best approach is to, it's sort of like people who can drink and smoke and live to be over 100. We
right.
know that's not the best approach, but for them, their vital force wasn't sensitive to cigarettes.
Right,
it wasn't
and just
sensitive to alcohol.
And just imagine if that cat who eats dry food and lived to be 22 didn't have dry food and ate a balanced diet, they might live to 32. So
Probably not. I would posit that if a cat made it to 22, made it that far, then it's just they aren't sensitive to food.
Okay.
It just wasn't, they got all the nutrition they needed from, you know, they just didn't need that.
Okay.
Now, the difference between a cat making it to 12 to 14 or over 20 definitely can be the food. Now, it certainly would help, but I wouldn't think it's a critical thing. I used to say that, but as I've wrestled with that a little more, I haven't seen that.
Mm-hmm.
So it really is, if we think about the teeth of a dog, they have ripping and tearing teeth, or a cat. This really applies to both. They have, I'm just doing nutrition with the hypothyroid because that fits in so well with it.
Mm-hmm.
Because what's one of the major symptoms of hypothyroid is obesity.
Right.
And lack of energy, therefore getting more obesity. So a lot of people start treating their hypothyroid dogs, even without knowing their hypothyroid, by wanting them to lose weight. And the best way to have them lose weight is to get them on a natural, on a better diet.
Mm-hmm.
So dogs and cats have ripping and tearing teeth. They have one huge set of bone-crunching teeth in the back of their mouth. And then in between, they have some molars and some premolars and some incisors, basically just to keep everything in place. But the only teeth that really do anything are the canines and those big bone-breaking molars in the back. Dogs don't have a row of teeth, and cats don't have a row of teeth to slowly chew their rice up or to chew their vegetables or to break down cooked meat so that the denatured bonds that are in it that have made it sort of shrivel up a little bit the way cooked meat is compared to raw. When
mm-hmm.
we chew it, we're breaking that down. We're starting the digestion in our mouth. We have lots of digestive enzymes in our mouth. Dogs and cats don't have any.
Hmm.
The mouth, and also dogs and cats' jaws only go up and down. The articulation goes up and down, not side to side. Yours and my jaws, you can do it right now. You can go up and down and side to side.
Right. Everybody try it.
So that you can chew. Dogs, cats, they can't really chew. All they can do is rip and tear and bone crunch.
Mm-hmm.
So the purpose of the dog or cat mouth is simply to get the meat small enough to swallow. And they can swallow pretty big pieces.
Mm-hmm.
I was surprised in one talk I gave where people brought their animals and somebody had brought a small mixed breed dog who was probably weighed about 12 pounds. So pretty very small dog. And they were feeding venison rib bones. And that dog was eating them, not just chewing on them, but breaking them up and swallowing them.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think a dog that small could. So I learned something new myself all the time. So,
okay.
The stomach then has pH of 1, and the food gets the meat and the mainly the meat and the bones get broken down in the stomach. And if there's any bacteria, pH of 1 is going to kill the bacteria. And then it quickly goes through a very short intestinal tract, and that's why you want to puree or run through a vegetable a juicer the vegetables that you're feeding to dogs and cats. Dogs need 50-50 or anywhere from 30% meat to 80% meat, or it even could be higher. Some people feed 100% meaty bones. Cats, in between. The source of the ingredients should be local and humanely raised. I want those farmers talking to the plants and telling them how good they are.
Oh, I'm smiling. Yeah, some people are able to get these types of quality foods and some are not. I don't know. I mean, maybe even through the internet they can. I want to also let you know that there's about 3 minutes left to the show.
Mm-hmm. Well, the nutrition is for all shows, so that's an important chunk for us. And
okay.
We will have a nutrition handout and a vaccine handout.
Okay.
So those you can get and follow up more, and we'll talk a bit as we go. With homeopathy, we don't have a remedy to treat hypothyroidism, just like we don't have a remedy for any particular illness. Instead, and as we talked about with Jean Dodds, any illness can be caused by a poorly functioning thyroid because the thyroid gland affects every organ. So the one that would be in common is sort of the disease rubric would be external throat, goiter. And then you go to whatever either caused it, you think, or what symptoms are being shown. So a few that you'll see in the handout that are common are obesity, and that's under generalities, ear problems, any sort of ear rubrics, discharges, inflammation, redness. When dogs are losing their hair, where would you go in the repertory for that? If they're losing hair on their butt,
mm-hmm.
would you go to extremities, nates?
Can you go to generalities? Is there
nope.
something? No.
There's not generalities hair loss. The only place you have hair loss, actually you have it in two places, but the main set of rubrics for hair is under the head because
mm-hmm.
remember the repertory is for people.
Right.
And people have most of their hair on their head. So you go to head, hair, falling. And often they have coarse hair or oily or dry or greasy or lusterless or tangling a lot, and all of those are sub-rubrics under head, hair. There is a rubric in skin for hair falling out, so that is the second rubric you can use, but you want to be sure to remember the head one.
Okay, and, so we're going to provide for everybody, there'll be a link to get this information.
No, I had already emailed. You have it.
Okay, I have it, but I'll have it available for the listeners. And then I think we only have like a minute left, so just let us know what we're going to talk about next session.
Next week, I think we really need to dig into vaccines and the entire issues of homeopathy and vaccines and homeopathic nosodes, and it'll probably be two or three at least sessions. We'll alternate them, but this will be the first of several on vaccinations.
I'm wondering, can anybody on the chat let me know if they can still hear us? Because, let me see, I think we only have 60 seconds left. Okay, so we're going to talk about vaccines and issues of homeopathy next week, and I really, really appreciate Dr. Christina Chambrow coming on with us, and I will provide for you links to further information and handouts as soon as we have them ready for you. So thank you again for listening.
Glad you all were here.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you so much, Deborah.
Thank you for listening to Pet Health and Homeopathy on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio. with homeopaths Debbie Brook and Dr. Christina Chambreau. We encourage you to follow our show, click the reminder button to receive email notices when show airs, share with friends on Facebook and Twitter, and send in your comments and questions. See you next time!